Welcome. It is now time for SDFO to VOIP. Please dial 929-299-1269 to join the conversation.
Welcome to the SDF conferencing system. You are the only party in this conference.
VOIP 929-299-1269.
One other party is in this conference. There are two other parties in this conference.
Hello?
VOIP 929-299-1269.
That's not right. tired today. I can't keep my eyes open.
VOIP
929-1269. I have to say, it's still too early. There's no one here but Elad. Hey, Elad. Can you tell me a story, please? Someone tell us a story. Little Miss Moffat sat on her tablet, eating her curds and whey. The curds and whey aren't really that good, actually. It was a spider. And it cuts in the way.
There are two other parties in this conference.
Hello, this is Jazz Matt.
Hello.
Oh, hi, Shufei. How are you tonight?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I think I was getting a little bit of choppiness a moment ago, but I can hear you now.
My connection again. I'm very tired tonight. I can't pop, let alone, sleep. I'm just in my head with my tablet. Yeah, it's a clumsy one on fire.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the last phrase.
I'm clumsy.
You're comfy? Is that what you said?
Clumsy.
Clumsy. Ah.
Right.
I know that. Well, I know all about clumsiness.
Have you little dogs here? Little dogs. And they're sleeping. And I'm about to sleep too. How are you? tonight? Is there anything interesting?
Freak snowstorm this morning, but other than that, pretty normal. Nothing too exciting beyond that.
Snowstorm. I hope there's a blizzard light out.
Yeah, it's not quite that bad, but I mean, it was bad enough that I guess it affected air traffic in the area, but
yeah.
We got a little bit of accumulation. It's a little sloppy out there tonight.
It's horrible to drive in.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of driving in snow. I can do it, but I prefer not to.
I get so nervous. I just hang out tight on the steering wheel. Can you tell me a story?
Tell you a story?
A bedtime story.
A bedtime story. I don't know. I'm not particularly good at telling stories. Let alone bedtime stories.
Didn't they have adventures together?
What's that?
Oh, VOIP 929-299-1269.
Capacitors and resistors?
What?
What do you want to know about capacitors and resistors?
A story, please.
A story? I don't know.
Dreamland is coming. Oh, thank you, JWH. That's a memory. The ones with the resistor from Nantucket. His cafe is so bad here. A ribbled line and therefore untuck it. This is Pippa.
So JWH
like
is making a started out with attempting a resistor based
I do know very awful. So I'm not going to repeat it, but yes, it is in San Pablo. Capacitors, resistors, and potentiometers. Teapot. You're making food. What are you making, food?
I'm just making some tea.
Oh.
I'm just setting the timer.
Is it sleepy time for you?
It is not yet sleeping time for me.
Yeah, they're kind of me.
For me, sleepy time usually isn't for another... Oh, 2 to 4 hours from now? Or were you referring to sleepy time as in the form of at the risk of angering the Taube herbal tea?
Mm-hmm. There's a little bear on the cover.
Yes.
I like that bear. Oh, I'm sleep so tired. My eyes open. Holy marmot. There's a marmoset. Home. I quite enjoy listening to the sounds of the house.
Oh, it's me walking back and forth through the apartment.
It's very comforting.
The sound of my creaky floor.
Yes, of course. Naturally, there's some creaky floorboards here too. But there's no one around but me and the dogs, little dogs here. But they're sleeping too.
OPVOIP 929-1269.
I love you. Very sweet dogs. I really love any dog that has floppy ears, you know, the flop. Their ears fall down like a purse. I just think they're adorable. I wonder what the point is in that, though. It's not good for them. I can't think they hear very well.
Yeah, you're talking about breeds of dog with ears that sort of fold down. Yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, dog breeds, all bets are off as far as as far as certain characteristics serving a practical purpose, but
it's an evolutionary advantage for them. They just
right.
It looks like you could open their heads and put in coins or something. It looks like a little coin purse. Cute little dogs. Oh, they're all tired now.
Hello and welcome. It is now time for SDFO to VOIP.
I have a very fuzzy
Please dial 929-1269 to join the conversation.
It's very comfortable. There's some water as well. This is very basic. It's so dehydrated in this time of year. I think in autumn people do get dehydrated. They don't drink as much as they could.
Yeah, that's probably true. They don't drink as much actual water. They'll drink more, as it gets cooler, drink more hot beverages, which may or may not help them out.
You drink coffee, you're not really...
Yeah, it's more of a diuretic than it is giving you any sort of fluid content that you retain for any length of time.
It's not really smart. Smoothies are alright, though, but aren't they?
I don't know, I guess they are, but, you know, once again, it's sort of cool beverage as the weather starts getting cold.
That's true.
Although every once in a while, I do have in the wintertime, do have craving for, like, ice cream or something like that, but that's probably, probably wanting the fat content that I could probably just as well, eat a steak or something, but,
I never thought of that, but I do too. I quite love some. I enjoy the ice cream and the chocolate. I love a good sherbet. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
Orange and mint, especially. Mint sherbet is lovely.
I should probably stop talking about that, otherwise I'm going to probably go out to the corner and get myself some ice cream. And I really don't want it.
I know the feeling. I was just thinking the exact same thing. There might be some in the freezer.
Fortunately, though, when there's snow and ice on the ground, it's somewhat of a good deterrent to going back out this late.
But do you have any cinnamon?
What's that?
Do you have cinnamon sticks for your,
I think I am out of cinnamon sticks. That was more of a thing that other people would acquire, and I would, other people in the family back in the day would acquire, and I would sort of, take advantage of, but it's been a long time since I've actually gone out and bought a cinnamon stick, a pack of cinnamon sticks or anything. I wonder if I even still have some hiding. You know how that sort of thing is, that when you have someone around that used to bake, that you end up with all sorts of stuff hiding out in the pantry.
They don't really go bad, though.
No, so long as you keep them dry and sealed up. Generally,
they smell a little bit, but they don't go bad, so to speak.
Yeah. No, I don't think I have any actual cinnamon sticks.
They're fun to play with.
I have nutmeg.
No, that doesn't do.
That's not really a tea thing.
No. Do you take milk? Do you put milk
in tea? No, I don't typically put milk in my tea. Every once in a while I get a chai tea, which is sort of a, milky tea.
Right.
But, that's sort of an out and about sort of decision.
Chai. Should you just chat?
Otherwise, it's usually some form of black tea or green tea is usually what I drink.
Green tea is really good for your health. That's really what you should choose. A nice green tea. Hard for your tea right about now.
What was that?
Amazing. I I'm too lazy to make tea. Fog. It's really ridiculous, isn't it? All you have to do is put the kettle on. Honestly, I don't want to disturb the dogs. I really don't. They're so fascinating. Floppy ears. So adorable. I wonder if there's a word for that sort of ear, the flopsy.
Is it like a folded ear or something like that? Or
folded ear.
Yeah, I don't know.
Folded, floppy, flopsy. What's the sort of rabbit? That's the apso, isn't it? No, that's the sort of dog.
Yeah.
Rabbit that has it.
Yeah, let me think. There's a particular, what is it, a breed that is a sort of a, I want to say it's like a French fancy kind of breed.
It's a breed.
That they're kind of woolly and floppy-eared, kind of like the typical, you know, bunny rag doll.
Like an Angora. It has a very soft fur. Not like that. They're really a rabbit. They're very sweet. Exotic breed. But they all have floppy ears.
The ones that are living in my neighborhood wild do not have floppy ears.
No, that wouldn't be advantageous for them. They need to have the ears straight up and down so they can hear the predators.
Yeah.
I imagine that must be very frustrating for the ones that have floppy ears.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's scary. Everything must sound muted. Very strange. Humans do very strange things. To make our animal friends happy. It is cute though. I do like it. Why do you laugh? I'm on the FBI. I don't understand that. On com. He says he's calling the FBI. Why are you calling the FBI? We're just talking about foxy ears, that's all. I wonder if humans can have foxy ears. If
I think there is some conditions that cause unusual folds in the ears of humans. But you might have to do a little research on that. I don't know if that's something I'm imagining or if that's something I've actually read somewhere or seen.
Well, they're so small. And there's so much cartilage, isn't there? When you think about how thin a rabbit's ear is, or a cat's ear, or even a dog's ear, they're very thin. Thin little folds of cartilage, but our ears are very thick, small. So there's a...
Oh, VOIP 929-1269.
Do you know that there's a sort of, there's a lineage of people that are blue, like Smurfs.
What's that?
There's blue people. There really are. There's people in the Appalachian Mountains. Who their ancestors are blue. It was a recessive gene, several generations, and they inbred in a little valley up in West Virginia, up someplace. And they're all blue. Blue is a smurf, is a blueberry.
Okay, I'll have to take your word on that.
No, really.
It looks like somebody found my SIP server. I had it open to the real world. I'm looking at the logs right now. Oh well, I'll collect some IP addresses to stick in the firewall. Let it run for a while. They're trying to call out on it and access internal extensions to try and manipulate it, but of course it's not really interconnected to anything at the moment.
How do they find that? How did someone...
They just go and port scan blocks of IPs, and if something answers back, then they come back and visit it.
Right. But that's very naughty. That's not nice of them.
I mean, I could probably, stick some rules in there and route their calls based on the messaging I'm seeing, and just answer them. But my guess is it's all an automated bot. It's not probably doing anything other than seeing if it can place a call either internally or route a call externally. And then if that happens, then yeah, they'll exploit it. Otherwise, I think they're attempting, a minor flood attack, because I'm getting a bunch of, since the first one hit this afternoon, I'm getting a bunch from all over the place now.
Oh, no. That's very naughty. It's all right to poke around and look at what you have open, but don't be, I don't understand that logic to be a bother. Well, do you know where the IPs are?
Yeah, I'm logging them, so I can, add them to blacklist pretty easily.
Can you look them up and see where they are?
I can, but there's no guarantee that they're actually valid for any length of time. I think I do have TCP SYN cookies turned on this host, so in theory they should be coming from, in theory, they should be coming from a routable IP somewhere, but...
How do you block them? You just put them in your firewall?
Yeah, you can do that. There's also flood protection in the SIP server, too, that basically, if they get too many requests from a single IP, it'll stop answering that IP. Which I have off at the moment. I'm just kind of fooling around with it. I was fooling around with it on and off over the weekend, trying to get some call routing, some unusual call routing going on. And I port forwarded the from the main real world routable IP into the internal SIP server. So now I'm seeing this interesting traffic.
So how did they discover you?
Well, I suspect they were just, port scanning addresses, basically picking a subnet block and sending SIP messages out, in an automated fashion. And if they get a response, then they know that there's SIP service running there. And then if that's the case, they will sometimes attempt to try and route some calls through it. Well, I mean, there are, misconfigured SIP servers out there. I mean, that's why we get all these sort of junk calls and things like that. A lot of that is probably coming through that sort of thing. And I think that's what, not SIP-based, but back in the day with PBXs and the telephone network, people figured out how to, dial in and dial back out and do things. Usually back then, though, the motivation was getting free calls. Today, the motivation seems to be just causing mayhem. Wasting people's time.
They are frequent. They're trying to call into the PPSN
Right. I mean, in theory, they are doing the same thing that they did back then, is they're trying to call into the...
Oh, that's
good. Call in and then route a call out again. But, of course, currently I have no active outbound service. I was just, you know, basically doing internal stuff. And then I'm also trying to set up peering with another SIP-based service. So right now it's set pretty liberally open. It's not going to route any calls outward, but... It's, you know, people are going to still bang on it because they can.
Can you say hello to them? Can you put them on the line?
As I said, you know, I could in theory, you know, I'm looking at the contents of the messages, so I see the URIs that they are originating from, or at least they're claiming to originate from. So in theory, I could probably insert a routing rule into the system to just route their call to, like, one of my ATAs, so it rings the phone, and actually answer it. Whether or not there'll actually be somebody on the other end is another matter. I think it's probably another state of testing, that right now they're trying to, you know, they started trying to find it, they found one, you know, they found mine, and now they're trying to see if they can route any calls through or access any extensions. And then, if they detect someone on an extension or manage to route a call through, then some human will probably intervene and find a way to exploit. But as I said, it's not really interconnected to anything, so there's not a whole lot they can do.
I think it would be very fun.
I mean, this is sort of the basis of how you run how honeypots work too. That you sit there and you just basically put a packet monitor on well-known ports and capture bad traffic and identify IP addresses and stick them in your block list.
What sort of things would you leave missed if you wanted to have it?
What was that?
What would you leave open?
I would normally, when everything is set and configured right, the real world IP would only be available to other hosts that I have peering arrangements with.
Mm-hmm.
So in theory, it shouldn't, you know, when I have it set up correctly, it won't answer any requests other than the requests of other SIP servers that I'm peered with, provided, of course, someone doesn't find a way to spoof them. And then, of course, you can also put authentication in both directions if you want to make it a little bit more difficult for people to do that. And then you can also stick everything, you know, in a TLS transport layer to kind of just make it less visible to prying eyes.
How many attacks do you get per month, would you say?
I don't know. I haven't really been monitoring the home. I don't run a lot of services off of the home internet, so I don't really monitor it that closely. But I suspect from past experience that that probably someone will hit, you know, like if I look at the traffic log on the SSH port, which is the one service that I do run, but usually that's kind of limited to a handful of IP addresses, so most of that traffic never makes it through.
Hello and welcome.
But in days past, when I used to run it more openly,
dial,
you know, there's all sorts of people,
to join the conversation.
Yeah, if they see port 22 open, they will bang the hell out of it, trying to either get in or just, you know, try to cause a denial of service for people that legitimately need to use it.
That would be rather fun, that is, to have popsicles for friends. You don't announce it as a challenge, but you leave it open. And people drop in. And some sorts of a honey pot. So you had a PDF, it was just sort of open. And see who drops in and who tries to crack into it.
Mm-hmm.
And craft a connection. That would be an interesting experiment, I
think. Yeah, and I mean, that sort of stuff goes on, I guess, at various hacking conferences and so forth, or computer security conferences, but it's like, since often a lot of voice over IP traffic goes over the wire unencrypted, you know, it's interesting to sort of, for people that can execute, you know, that are in positions to actually do packet capture to sort of, you know, actually, you know, capture an actual conversation in flight.
Someone was mentioning that they've been able to maybe. Someone was talking about that. They've been able to
What was that?
One of the codecs.
VOIP 929-1269.
From the encrypted packets.
Really? Yeah, I would suspect that would be a problem. That, you know, basically knowing what is actually being transported in a particular encryption session might give some hints as to, you know, basically how to do effective cryptanalysis on it and maybe recover information.
Reconstruct 50-90% of the English from it.
Mm-hmm.
And several other languages. They used Spanish at one point, I think.
Interesting.
It's a very interesting paper. My dogs are still asleep. Checking my dogs. Just a doggy. Hello. Yeah. No, that would be very fun to go to a hacker conference. I've never actually gone.
I've only been to a few. I've been to two of the Hope conferences, and then there was a smaller one that was in the Midwest in the that was in Cleveland, Ohio, I believe, called Nauticon, that I've been to a few times in the past when that ran. It's interesting. I've never been to DEF CON, but basically as it's described to me, I don't know that I would probably want to. Also, I don't particularly care for Las Vegas, so.
Not at all. Too much brouhaha. I don't care for that. Oh, they're very interesting. They have the talks, right? The chat sessions.
Yeah, I mean, if that's what you're going there for, there have been some very notable talks at DEF CON over the years, but there seems to be a sub, you know, it's basically a party as well, and sometimes a little out of control.
From what I hear. Many, many young people in one little tiny space. Too much for me.
Attention on radio listeners. Coming up at 0300 hours UTC is a pandemic with open mic. Anyone can stream.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, what's that? He was very into the architecture of the chips, the CPU chips. So he It really shows how he puts them under the microscopes and puts them around them and then looks at the address space and everything. Right there, you can actually see. Transistors inside. They're not transistors for real, are they? They're just little... How do you call them? The little things inside the chip.
The little things inside the chips? Are you talking like...
I can't.
Are you talking like a chip die? Or are you talking about the individual transistors on the fabricated on the chip die?
Right, on the chip. They are called transistors, aren't they? It's strange to talk about them as transistors because they're so small.
Yeah.
I think they're called something else, but they really are tiny little babies. So there's posters on Mastodon that they showed ENIAC. They showed an ENIAC RAM module. It was from 1947, and it was one byte of RAM, and it was it was about meter tall. It was a full yard. It was 3 to 4.
Yeah.
Feet. It's amazing, isn't it? Just to think.
Yeah, yeah.
60 years, 70 years.
Yeah, some of the memory storage technologies that have emerged over the years are kind of wild, like mercury delay lines. It's like...
Right.
Yeah. Wow. It's like... That is not an application... That is not a solution to the problem I would have ever thought of would come into existence.
I can't remember one that I read about. I actually think that dug up one of the old spec sheets on... It was very strange. It was tube memory, television tube memory. The TV tube, I'm trying to remember how it actually went. There was like a CRT.
Uh-huh.
The memory was arranged in a grid on the CRT, and it was...
Well, I imagine you could probably make dynamic RAM out of CRT. I don't know what the application would be. What the application would be for capacitors at the multi-kilovolt level, but...
VOIP 929-1269.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, and it, I don't know how common it was by any means, but very strange to think, who would think of that? In a CRT.
Right, it's not practical, but yeah, when you think about it, you know, the CRT in and of itself is essentially a capacitor, in addition to it being, you know, a display device. So yeah, I guess you could make some type of, you could get, you know, hook a bunch of them together and make some type of dynamic read-only random access memory out of them, perhaps, or a serial memory or whatever is easier.
Do you know much about core memory?
I know a little bit. That's another interesting memory technology, but that one I can kind of see being, much like dynamic memory storing information, you know, in a capacitor and having to refresh it. I can also see it storing information in a magnetic field. That seems like a logical progression of technology, but it's interesting in the sense that, reading the data out of it basically alters the state, so you have to, once again, rewrite the information after you read it out.
Delete and redraw, so you can't.
Yeah.
It's not really memory so much as, well, it's not reusable memory. You have to take it in and dump it out. It's like a trash can.
It's kind of like refresh in a different sort of way. Instead of having to touch everything periodically, you only have to touch
attention
it when
on radio listeners. Coming up at 0300 hours UTC is a PanMic with open mic. Anyone can stream.
They're not budged. So supposedly you can actually read them after decades.
Yeah, wasn't there an instance where they did actually recover recover something out of old core memory?
Oh, yeah, several times. There's a project. I haven't seen the videos, but one of them is the ATC, the Apollo Guidance Computer.
Sure.
They have one that serves the living history. Was it living history or computer history museum? I'm always confusing it here. They have a pause there. And I haven't gotten to that video yet, but they sure enough dumped all the information out. It's really ingenious when you think about it. I doubt anything besides microspecial core memory will survive in 100 years. Unless we have something a little more durable, like Norsum disks or other laser crystal storage.
Some type of optical storage in a medium that is sort of chemically stable for a very long period of time.
Crystal, really. Silicon crystal. That's not bad at all. And you could do it so that you could actually have it analog, so you could actually print the books microscopically. I wish I could do that. No, but I was thinking of actually doing a project with core memory.
Hmm.
I was thinking to put some, I went to a makeup space, and they have a sewing machine with it's not iron, it's a conductive wire that you can actually...
Yeah, like a conductive thread, right?
But it's for the little people that put the blinking lights, the blinking lights.
The people that want wearable technology.
If I could weave some fabric, like a skirt, it would be fun to put some core on it, but I'm not sure how the static would play heck with the core itself and make charge. You understand? Like, I don't know if they need to have oxygen all around them to maintain their state. Follow. So if I could weave cord into some fabric with some of that wire, and then also use something that's low static, like I don't really know, linen maybe.
Yeah, JWH just mentioned that there was an interesting segment on NPR. All Things Considered, I think, is the program he was talking about, audio recording technologies from the 30s and 40s. Celluloid recording technology. I mean, that's sort of. Some of the motion picture industry used actually audio tracks that were optically stored on the actual film.
Oh, right. Yes. Very interesting.
It's interesting when I go to the Film Society screenings I go to in the local area here. The joke was the last one I went to, it's like they will often like scratch a slide for a display or a small segment of scrap of film. And they're like, yeah, it's like if anyone has something in their collection that they can't do anything with, they'll just send it to us and we'll use it as a display kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And some of the overlays that they did, you can still see the audio track on the film because they basically, converted the whole section of film, frame.
So how did they decode it? What was the...
Well, it wasn't really decoding it. Well, I think there's just an optical sensor. I'm not sure specifically how the mechanism worked, but I mean, you can literally...
Attention on radio listeners. Coming up at 0300 hours UTC is a PenMic with open mic. Anyone can stream.
But I'm not sure exactly how they recapture that. Or actually transfer it to film. That would be kind of interesting to see. I've just seen, you know, just seen the resulting pieces of film with the,
It's AM. It's amplitude modulation, right, aimed at the film.
Yeah, that's what I would suspect by just looking, because I've seen it, you know, I've seen the audio tracks on the film, and that's what it looks like. It looks like an AM signal.
I'm trying to imagine what would decode it. How did that actually work with 1940 early technology? I'm trying to imagine that.
Yeah, but I can't really quite wrap my head around the, you know, how the actual transfer was facilitated and how the read back of the information was, you know, what was what technology used to do that.
Well, they had photo cells, didn't they?
I don't know. Did they have, a cadmium sulfide cell or something like that in existence in the 30s and 40s?
And run a light through it for the first cell. That would have been, that might have worked.
That might have been contemporary and may have worked to do that, yeah.
Interesting. I saw things on my woman who was deaf, and she could lip read. So his museum have old films are silent and actually
right, because they actually often mouth things, and it may not actually be what's in the intertitle.
Well, Einstein wrote about the photoelectric effect in 1970. Right, it's not that, not that new.
Yeah, so photoelectric effect. Yeah, the theory of it is not very new. It's, you know,
it would have been familiar.
It's just a matter of whether or not you could actually make a practical device to to do anything with that.
Well, they had television, didn't they? They had the sort of that it was like a helix, light.
Yeah.
What do you call that with a spinning wheel? That's it has a single dot in it that it's keyed to time, and then it creates an image onto the.
Shoot, I can't remember what that's
sort of television.
I know what you're talking about. I can't think of it. I don't know. Someone recently attempted to remake something like that.
He redid the old German television screen. There's actually an amateur scene now. Compared to this old sort of television. Right, it's very, very strange. It only has, I'm trying to remember, about 100 odd pixels across. Postage.
Right, and you know, the images for them were not very good, but
no.
They were kind of shadowy, if I remember correctly.
They come out of a little wheel.
Right.
A wheel. So it's what do you call that?
Yeah, it's sort of a wheel with a organized sort of configuration of dots through it, if I remember correctly.
The dots are in a spiral, and they project onto a bunch of mirrors.
Yeah.
Set up in a helix. It's like a DNA helix. There's wind spinning. And when this thing turns very fast, you can actually watch it. And it creates the illusion of a television. And so they have these boxes with these spinning loud rotating things. In the 1930s, they were doing television. It's really amazing. I think so. I think.